Actually, by looking at the syllabus last Friday, I realized we were supposed to have done this mutation lecture last time, but that's fine. We'll do it today. We have time. The other thing we're going to do today is watch a movie. But first, we need to talk about mutation. And we've looked at this first, this slide is one we've looked at before. We looked at it before for a different discussion. When we looked at this before, we were talking about gene expression in general, when you first learned about gene expression. And what is gene expression? What's that phrase refer to? Yes, it includes those two things, although they're in the reverse direction. Gene expression refers to using a gene to indirectly make a protein, and the actual way that cells do that is through the process of transcription first, and then translation, like we talked about. Right, and what is transcription?
Building of mRNA.
Right, it's the building of messenger RNA. And how does the cell know how to do that? No. What about the DNA? It reads the code, right. And what is the actual code in the DNA? It's the sequence of nucleotides. Exactly. So that's what a gene is. It's a sequence of nucleotides within an overall bigger DNA molecule. But whatever that sequence of nucleotides is, tells the cell what the messenger RNA nucleotide sequence should be. And how does it determine that? Assuming a cell can read the DNA, how does it know what the sequence in the messenger RNA should be? So it should be the same sequence?
Not the same sequence, it would be complementary.
Right, it matches up complementarily, not similarly. Okay, so that's what's going on here. The red piece of messenger RNA is complementary to one of the two strands of DNA, the coding strand of DNA, or the template strand of DNA. And translation, remember, does not involve DNA. DNA's job is done as soon as transcription is over, as far as gene expression is concerned. So once the messenger RNA molecule is built, it's that molecule that's now carrying the code. DNA has done its job. It's like delivering a message to someone else for that person to deliver the message to a third person. Translation uses that messenger RNA molecule as a code for how to actually build the molecule, the protein. And why do we need codons to be three nucleotides long?
They're redundant codes for one amino acid.
Well, that's true, but that's not the answer to the question. The question is, why does a codon have to be three nucleotides? Was anyone here that day?
It was because there's 20 different amino acids.
Right, 20 different amino acids that organisms use.
And if there were only two, you could only get 16 amino acids.
Right, because why?
Because there's four different bases.
Exactly, there's only four nitrogenous base types. CTA, well, sorry, in RNA it's... it's not C-T-A-N-G, it's C-U-A-N-G. And therefore, two nucleotides would give you 16 combinations, 4 times 4. Just one would only give you 4. Those are both not enough. So you have to go to 3 nucleotides, which is 4 times 4 times 4, or 64 possible combinations, more than enough to unambiguously code for each of the 20 amino acids that organisms need to use for their proteins, to build their proteins. And that's why each codon here corresponds to exactly one amino acid. And UGG, for instance, which is specifying TRP, which is tryptophan, one of the 20 amino acids, non-ambiguity of the genetic code says that UGG always specifies tryptophan, never any other amino acid. So that's why in the genetic code in slide 2 that we've also already looked at, you have multiple codons coding for the same amino acid in a lot of cases, simply because 64 is way more than you need to specify 20. If it happened to be that there were 64 amino acids that organisms use, then there wouldn't be any redundancy, right? Every one of those 64 codons would have to be used to specify its own amino acid. But there's not. There's only 20 that they organisms use, so there's plenty to go around. And just keep in mind that four of them play special roles. The one in green here, AUG, is the start codon and the codon that codes for methionine, one of the 20 amino acids. So AUG can be used multiple times within the same messenger RNA, but AUG is always going to be the first codon in messenger RNA because that tells the ribosome, here's where we start. That means that the first amino acid in any brand new polypeptide that's being built has methionine as its first amino acid, because the start codon says methionine is the one you should put here. Okay? But also you can have other methionines somewhere other than the first position, which means you would use AUG again in that same sequence. The stop codons don't work that way, though. The stop codons tell it stop and that's it. The stop codons do not specify any amino acid. So by the time that the stop codon comes up at a ribosome, at the A slot, no more amino acid is added. The final one has already been added in the previous step, and the stop codon just tells the ribosome it's already done now, time to disintegrate the whole complex and release the polypeptide onto its own. Okay. Well, none of that had anything to do with mutation yet, but now it's time to talk about mutation. And first, let me just give you a definition. Mutation is any change that occurs to DNA sequence. So any given DNA molecule you look at has a certain sequence from beginning to end. Certain sequence of A's, C's, T's, and G's, and could be in any order. A mutation is something that happens for whatever reason that causes a change to that sequence. And there's different ways that that can happen, but they're all classified as mutation. Mutations are random accidents. They occur all the time at a low rate for various reasons. They can occur simply because the cell makes a mistake when it's copying its DNA and doesn't catch that mistake. They can occur because of certain chemicals. They can occur because of radiation, for instance. So there's things about the environment that can also cause mutations, but sometimes they're just random accidents happening in the cell. By the way, things that cause mutations, like ultraviolet radiation or certain chemicals, they're called mutagens, which simply means create mutation. This is why sunlight causes skin cancer, by the way. Cancer in general is caused by mutations. Mutations that accumulate in your body over time. It's like throwing switches. You don't get cancer from just throwing one switch on. You get it by throwing several switches on, but every time you throw a switch, you're closer to the point where all you need is one more switch to be thrown and you get the cancer. And that's why repeated exposure to a mutagen will get you closer and closer to the point where you actually have cancer. So that's why it's foolish, for instance, in smoking, to think that you've gotten away with it for this many years, when in fact, really, you're for those years that you're smoking, you're throwing more and more switches, which means you have fewer switches left before you actually get cancer, and it can happen any time. But anyway, mutation is the original source of all genetic variation. Right? There's all kinds of genetic variation in the world, as which we see as all kinds of different organisms. But all organisms came from the first organism. We all descended from those first cells. And the reason that we have different DNA is because along the course of biological history over billions of years, mutations have occurred. That's how you get new versions of DNA, by mutation happening. Now, sex mixes up the DNA because you mix genes from both parents. But sexual reproduction does not create new DNA. Meaning that if the parents were identical to begin with, if everything had the same DNA and there were no mutation, then having sex would not mix up anything. It would be like shuffling a deck that's all aces, aces of hearts. Right? It doesn't matter how many times you shuffle it, you're going to get ace of hearts. The only reason sex works to increase the variation is because the two parents have different DNA to begin with. And the whole reason that they have different DNA is because mutation has occurred. So mutation is the original source of all genetic variation. Now, mutation can be good, bad, or neutral as far as the fitness of the organism is concerned. You know, mutations are random events. They're just accidents. So it should make sense to you that if you just randomly change the DNA sequence, chances are it's not going to be good for you. It's probably going to be neutral, if not bad for you. Right? But why does mutation have an effect on traits? A mutated cell is going to have different traits compared to one that has not mutated. Why? Alter what? Well, that's what mutation is. How does that change your traits? Right? Alleles are genes. So if you have a mutation, you have a different allele compared to what you had before. But how does that change your traits?
Aren't your traits based off your genes?
Well, yeah, but why? That's just another way of asking my question.
Because the message is given to proteins and then it travels throughout your whole body, so one of them is messed up.
One of what is messed up?
One of the codes.
So one of you're talking about the DNA?
Yeah.
Then what will happen? Of what?
Trait.
Well, a trait is not a structure. So it doesn't make sense to say a deformed trait. It will replicate whatever is the current thing. So that is true that mutations get passed on. Because if DNA changes, then when DNA copies itself for the next generation, that new version, the mutant version, will be copied instead. But that still doesn't say why the trait changes. Well, a trait is a version of a characteristic, so that's just saying the same thing, basically. What actually gives you your traits? No. DNA indirectly determines your traits. What directly determines your traits? Proteins, right. So why does mutation change your traits?
Because
What do you mean they get bad?
They get bad really good instead, right?
Well, that's the effect of the traits. But if DNA is the instructions for how to make messenger RNA, and messenger RNA is the instructions for how to make proteins, and you mess with the DNA, that means you're going to make the wrong kind of messenger RNA, which is now going to be the wrong set of instructions for how to make the protein. In other words, or I should say a different set of instructions. So the protein you end up assembling is going to be different compared to what it would be if you used the original plans, the unmutated DNA. So that's why your traits are different, because the proteins you produce are different if you have different versions of DNA. That's why we are different from each other. We're producing different sets of proteins because we have different DNA. Okay? Now this can happen, this mutation can happen in different ways. And it can affect different amounts of DNA. In slide 3, we're looking at mutations that are pretty simple as far as how they occur. These are called point mutations. And they're called point mutations because just one position on the DNA is being changed. So a single nucleotide. Or really you could call it a single nucleotide pair, because there's one position includes a nucleotide in one strand and a nucleotide at the same position on the other strand. Okay? So on the top we have a stretch of DNA in blue, double-stranded DNA, called the wild type. Wild type is what is the phrase we use to describe a gene or an individual of the type that you find most often if you actually go out and sample that species. All right, so it is the so-called normal DNA for that species. And normal defined simply as most of the individuals have this type. Okay? It's not to say it's perfect. There's no perfect DNA. There can always be improvements. There can always be things that happen to make it not as good. But that's the wild type at the top. And that's not the entire gene. It's just a sequence. But notice the top strand is the template strand. So during transcription, the two strands get separated so that you can read that template strand, and then that TAC, TTCA, and so on gets read by the cell to produce the messenger RNA, which is complementary to it. Using a U for a T in the DNA, using an A for a T, using a C for a G, using a G for a C. That's how you get this normal wild-type messenger RNA. That's just transcription like we've already talked about. Well, when you divide that messenger RNA into groups of three nucleotides, or codons, and look those codons up in the genetic code, you can figure out what amino acids are being specified by that messenger RNA. So AUG is not only the start codon, it's also the codon for methionine. AAG says lysine, and so on. That's how the cell knows exactly what sequence of amino acids to put together to make that polypeptide or protein. So that sequence of purple beads on this string represents the wild type or normal protein. So no mutation is represented at the top. That's the normal. All the boxes that have shading below that are mutations of some sort. But there's two columns here, A and B. In the left column, these are all classified as base pair substitutions. Now, what do I mean by a base pair? A couple of what? A couple of nucleotides, how arranged? Why two? I said this about 5 minutes ago.
Because
There's two because there's two strands. So this T in this one strand and this A in the same position on the other strand is one base pair. It's simply because DNA is double-stranded that we talk about a base pair. So one base pair represents one position, the smallest number of nucleotides possible to change. Right? All of these examples in this left column are changing just one position in the original DNA. But you can do that, even though you're doing the same thing, changing just one position, the effects can be different. That's why you have three different examples just within this one column. The first is called a silent mutation. And what's happening here is that the DNA, the wild type DNA from the top, has mutated so that that position shown in orange here, instead of being the G, which it should have been, is now an A. That's a different sequence. Different. It's a change in DNA, therefore it's a mutation. Yeah, this is a point mutation. A base pair substitution is a point mutation because point means one position. Yeah.
If the DNA gets mutated and it changes, is it still like the sequence? Is it still like a palindrome? Or is it?
Well, this has nothing to do with palindromes. None of this is a palindrome. It's still a sequence, though. It's just a new sequence. That's what mutation does. It creates a new sequence of DNA because it changes the original sequence. Once you have a new sequence, different things can happen, though. And in the case of a silent mutation, the reason this is called a silent mutation is because when this normal G turned into an A, that means the codon that it's part of, which is this codon right here, it should have been GGC, right? To correspond to CCG, right? The normal codon should have been GGC. But since this is now an A, the codon in the messenger RNA is now going to be GGU. Now, notice that's what happens with mutation. You have new messenger RNA now. Even though the cell is obeying the instructions in the DNA, transcription is going correctly, in other words. Since the DNA is different, it's obeying a different set of instructions, basically. So it makes GGU instead of GGC. Now, when you go to the genetic code and look up GGC, it says glycine is the amino acid. But when you look up GGU, because of redundancy, you also have glycine being specified by GGU. Therefore, even though the DNA and the mRNA are different in this mutant version, you end up making exactly the correct protein anyway, simply because there's two different ways to say glycine. And that's why it's called a silent mutation. You cannot tell at all by looking at the traits of this organism that it's mutated, because it's still making exactly the same protein that a wild type is. But it is mutated because the DNA has changed. Okay, so the next is a missense mutation. Here, it's this position that's changing, and instead of it being a C, which it should have been, it's a T. So now this codon, which T is the first position of, instead of it being GGC, it's AGC. Right? Complementary to TCG here. Becomes AGC. Well, when you look up AGC, you no longer get glycine. You get serine instead. So, during translation, the cell puts down the correct sequence of amino acids for the first three, but when it gets to that new codon that's resulting from the mutation, it puts the wrong amino acid in that fourth position. Well, when you put the wrong amino acid on, you have a new protein. Now, that new protein, just if you randomly change a protein structure, chances are it's not going to do the job that it's supposed to do, because proteins operate based on their shape, and the shape of a protein depends on what the actual sequence of the amino acids is. So if you play around with that sequence, you change the shape, and if you change the shape, you change the function. This is why mutations are usually either neutral at best, if not bad, for the organism, because the protein no longer works. And when that's true, that means that organism is not as fit. In other words, does not do as well under the conditions in which it lives. So that's going to give it a reduced chance of surviving compared to the other ones of its same species that did not mutate. If you have a reduced chance of reproducing because you have a reduced chance of survival, then that means you have a reduced chance of passing on this new version, which is what you do when you reproduce. So bad mutations tend to die out. They're not passed on to future generations. But every once in a while, this new version of a protein might actually work better. So now all of a sudden, that individual has an advantage compared to all the other individuals in the population. Increased chance of survival, therefore increased chance of passing on that new version to the next generation. So good mutations, just accidentally that happen to be good, get passed on to future generations. This is how evolution works. This is why after many, many generations, you have species that become more and more fit. They become more and more adjusted to their surroundings, basically. And accidents that happen in other organisms, they'll go in a different direction. And that's why you have different species, even though we have a common ancestor. Yeah?
Even though these things are accidents, since mutations are accidents,
yeah.
Why exactly do they happen, though?
Well, they happen just for chemical reasons. Remember I said that the fact that A always goes with T is because of the number of hydrogen bonds it makes? That's why it usually happens that way, almost always. But it's still possible for an A to hook up with a G instead. Just chemically, it's possible, even though it's less likely. And therefore, it's going to happen every once in a while. That's an accident.
Can it be fixed?
Hmm?
Can it be fixed, or is it just...
Yeah, it can be fixed by the cell if the accident happens and the cell recognizes it. So these... You know, when DNA is copied before a cell splits, DNA replication occurs so that each cell has a copy of the DNA from the original cell. And that has to be an exact copy. Well, there's millions of DNA nucleotides within one cell. So even if you do it very well and only make a mistake once out of every million time, you're still going to make several mistakes. If you have millions of nucleotides. And that does occur. Millions of mistakes, mistakes are made every time a DNA gets replicated, but cells have the ability, once they make the new DNA, of reading it and making sure that it matches the original. And if it doesn't, then they correct it. So it can be fixed, but accidents can occur in that too. So some mistakes do make it through, only very few, but some make it through the process. So the reason this is called a missense is because now you've basically changed the meaning of the sentence. If you think of amino acids as being words in a sentence, changing a word is going to change what it means. Just like changing an amino acid is going to change what the protein does. Now this final example in this same column is called a nonsense mutation. The same thing's happening here. You're changing just one nucleotide. It's this one. Instead of it being a T, it's an A. And so now you have ATC in the DNA, which means complementarily you're going to make a messenger RNA codon that is UAG instead of AAG. Once again, UAG is the wrong codon, but in this case, when you look up UAG, you don't get a different amino acid. UAG is one of the three stop codons. So even though the cell has only put down one amino acid so far, it gets this stop codon immediately and says, okay, I'm done. So it's not even a protein, it's just a single amino acid that it made, which is clearly not going to do the job. So that's always going to be bad for the cell. If that's a protein that's absolutely necessary for survival, the cell will not survive. Yeah. This happens to humans just like it happens to any organism. Well, it depends on what gene it is in. That's what I'm saying. If this is a protein that's absolutely necessary for you to develop as a fetus, then it would just be a spontaneous abortion.
Wow.
If it's a protein that happens to be necessary for normal functioning, but you can survive, it could be a human who lives to adulthood but has some sort of disorder. Depends on what the gene is. All right, those are all base pair substitutions. And what these have in common is that one nucleotide was substituted for another. Since there's a substitution, there is no change in the length of the DNA sequence. Right? Here you just substituted an A for a G, here a T for a C, here an A for a T. But in each case, you still have the same number of overall nucleotides in the DNA, because you've substituted. On the right side, that's not true. In all these ones on the right side, the length of the DNA is changing. And that's because either a nucleotide is being inserted between two that already exist there, or one is being deleted without replacing it. Either way, you're changing the overall length of the DNA, right? So there's two major ways that can happen. Insertion mutations, in which one or more nucleotides are put between the wild type ones that are supposed to be next to each other, or deletion mutations, in which one or more nucleotides are deleted. Well, these have more widespread, or I mean, they have more drastic effects, because deletions and insertions cause what are called frame shifts. A frame shift is a change in the frame of reference that a cell has when it's reading the codons. Now, a while back, I was comparing this sequence of codons to a sentence, a sequence of words making up a sentence. Now, in sentences in English, not all words are three letters, right? We have different lengths words. But it doesn't matter that they're different lengths because we separate different words with spaces. Well, there's no spaces in the sequence of nucleotides that a cell reads. But it doesn't really need spaces because every word is exactly three letters. All you need to do is just read it three letters at a time, right? So you don't really need those spaces. But what you do need to know is where the first word starts. That sets the frame. Right? In other words, this by starting here, the cell knows this is the first codon, not this. See what I'm saying? To use a sentence example, if you have a sentence that's made up of only three-letter words, like the red bat ate the dog. It's a very big bat. Okay, that has a certain meaning to us, right? Just like a certain protein with that sequence of amino acids would have a certain function. Well, if I insert an R here between the T and the H, now all of a sudden I have TRH, ERE, DBA, TAT, ETH, EDO, and so on. You see what's happened? By shifting the frame, everything after the mutation is affected. Because I'm reading that differently. And this clearly is gibberish, right? You don't know what the hell that means. Because these aren't real words. Well, that's like making a protein in which all the amino acids beyond this point are the wrong ones. It's still a protein, but it's not going to have the right shape to do whatever job it's supposed to do in the cell. And the same thing would happen if I took out a letter instead. This was an insertion, but if I took out this E, then I'd have THR and so on. So insertions and deletions both cause frame shifts. Those have drastic effects. This top frame shift is causing an immediate nonsense because it has caused this codon that's being read to be a stop codon. Whenever it's a stop codon prematurely, then that's a nonsense mutation. This frame shift is causing extensive missense. Extensive missense because multiple amino acids are wrong. And then this one is not a frame shift on the bottom, even though it's an insertion or deletion, because as long as you insert or delete some multiple of three, then you've maintained the order of the frame shift. Right? If I insert OLD, three nucleotides, right here, it's not going to be the same sentence, but you're still going to have the same frame. So it's not going to be the old rat bat ate the dog. See what I'm saying? Or if I take out three, take out these, it's going to be the bat ate the dog. So in other words, these amino acids are right, but there's either additional amino acids or there are some that are missing, both of which can be either bad, good, or neutral to the cell. Frame shifts, though, usually are very bad simply because you're messing with so much that the chance is almost zero for it to be good. What the hell's wrong? All right, slide four. Not sure what's on slide four. Oh, slide four shows you an example in humans. So on the left, we have wild-type DNA in the gene that codes for hemoglobin. And this is just one codon within that DNA. The whole gene is much longer, of course. But hemoglobin is a pigment in the blood. It carries oxygen and carbon dioxide around. Keeps us alive for that reason. And like all proteins in the body, the cells need instructions for how to build that protein. That's in genes. So there's a gene for hemoglobin. And the one position, the one codon, which is three positions, that we care about here are shown is supposed to be CTT. That means in the messenger RNA, it's supposed to be GAA. That's wild type. When you look up GAA, it's glutamic acid. So this is the amino acid that is supposed to be in that position in hemoglobin. And if it is in that position in hemoglobin, the person is a normal human, and its hemoglobin works well, functions properly. On the right side, we have all the other codons within this gene still being okay. But this one position within the one codon is mutating. And this is a mutation that really occurs. Instead of CTT, you have CAT, right? Therefore, in the messenger RNA, you have GUA instead of GAA. Look up GUA, you don't get glutamic acid, you get valine. So just one amino acid of the many that are in hemoglobin is wrong in this type of person. And this is what causes sickle cell disease. All right. Well, it's bad to have sickle cell disease, which means you would think that this mutation dies out. It wouldn't be passed on to future generations because people with sickle cell disease have a much reduced chance of passing that mutation on since they have a much reduced chance of survival. But instead, we see sickle cell disease, or we see this mutant allele being passed on all the time. And the reason that is because humans are sexual organisms, so we have two of every gene, right? We have two alleles, one from both parents. So we can be homozygous or heterozygous. Well, if you are homozygous wild type, meaning both of your parents gave you the normal type, then certainly you don't have sickle cell disease, right? Totally normal, genetically. If both of your parents give you the mutant version, then you have sickle cell disease, which is bad. But if one parent gives you the mutant version and one parent gives you the normal version, that one normal version is enough for you not to have the disease. So you'll be a normal human as far as sickle cell disease is concerned. But also, being heterozygous, having that one version of the bad one, actually gives you an increased protection against malaria compared to a fully normal person. So having two is bad, but having one is good, and even better than fully normal. So it gets passed on. Yeah.
My cousin has salt. She has just have acid in her mouth or something, because her stomach's gonna have acid, and both her parents, I guess, had it, and they were recessive, and they just went together.
Yeah, they were carriers. Her parents were carriers. Carriers don't actually have the disorder because they have one normal allele, and one normal allele is enough to make you normal. Just like one purple flower allele is enough to make a heterozygous pea plant fully purple, one normal allele is enough to make you normal. But if you have two heterozygous parents getting together, there's a 1/4 chance that both parents will pass on the mutant version, and that's what happened. Same thing would happen here, just with a different gene. Okay, but this explains the fact that a heterozygous individual is actually better off with respect to malaria than a fully normal person is why this thing keeps getting passed on, even though it's bad in combination. And this is also why people of African descent have a bigger prevalence of sickle cell disease, because in that part of the world, malaria is a much bigger problem. Therefore, it makes sense for people in that part of the world to have a greater concentration of this allele in their populations because it protects them. Damn it, this battery is still... Didn't this suddenly go back to being normal like I was hoping it would? Smacking is the way to do it. Works with TVs, old-style TVs. Well, you see on slide 5, this is the last slide, this is how it's happening. The same example here, sickle cell disease. Normal sequence of amino acids is shown on the top. This is the wild type individual. That's not the whole sequence, but it's the first 7. And that makes a normal shaped protein that functions normally of a healthy red blood cell. Is like a squashed donut, a biconcave disc it's called. That's what it looks like. Because the hemoglobins don't interact with each other. But when you have sickle cell disease, all the amino acids are correct except that 6th one, which is, instead of being glutamic acid, is valine. You make a subunit for this protein that is grossly misshapen, which means it's, first of all, it's not able to do as good a job at carrying oxygen, which is why a hemoglobin is there. But it also starts interacting with other hemoglobin molecules. They clump together. And the red blood cell becomes misshapen into this sickle shape, which is why it's called sickle cell disease. Okay? So that's mutation. Let me make sure that was the last slide. I think it was. Yeah, that's it. So we'll start the movie at 10 after.